ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us for tonight's Comic Book Club. And now, here are your hosts, Pete LePage, Justin Tyler, and Alex Albert!
Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And that's our man of the booth, Booth Man! Thank you guys so much for coming out tonight. We're very excited to have you all here. Unfortunately, our scheduled guest, Fabian Nisweza, had to leave town suddenly. So you couldn't be here.
I'm sorry.
What?
He laughed.
He's laughing at our failure.
He killed a man.
Oh, and that's why? And he had the courtesy to email you?
He's like, hey, I killed a man, LOL. Anyway, I got to leave town. But we do have two amazing guests, which we'll get to in a second. But first, Pete, something stupid you wanted to talk about.
Yeah. Get stupid.
I mean, it's tough to get past.
This is in the talk show business called setting it up.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, great. Good.
Yeah,
thank you.
It's a great
Yeah, real exciting stuff going on. I don't know if everybody's seen, but there's a new trailer for the Street Fighter movie. Yeah, Chun Li, let's do this! Huh? Nobody? Damn it, you're right. I owe you $5.
You're welcome.
Damn.
The fan base has really disintegrated for that video game.
Yeah. Cool. Well, we got more exciting stuff than Street Fighter 2 for you guys tonight. We have two amazing guests for you, so let's welcome them out. Ladies and gentlemen, David Gallagher and Valerie D'Orazio! Yeah! Yeah! Yeah!
Yeah! Yeah! Yeah! Yeah! Yeah!
Welcome.
Hello.
Welcome.
Good to see you.
Hello.
Thank you guys so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate it.
You're very welcome, Alex.
Valerie, you used to work for Fabian, our missing guest, right?
I did at Acclaim Comics in the mid-90s.
Oh. Yeah. What's the deal with this guy?
he's really awesome guy. He was a really awesome boss in EIC. So I don't know what he show up to do, but
he's actually the publisher.
What?
But they don't... In order to do sort of research for the new Batman books he's writing, he had to, get into character. So he's dressing up, parading around Gotham City.
Parading? I don't know if you understand the Batman mythos.
Well, I've watched the Adam West stuff.
Yeah. A lot of parading.
He's doing that, Fabian's doing like the Bat-tussie.
Yeah.
So, David, you've been on the show before for High Moon, among other things. And Valerie, you are writing the upcoming Cloak and Dagger miniseries.
Which
we'll definitely talk about both of this sitting separately in a moment, but you guys are also a comic book couple.
Yes,
a late Valentine's Day present to you guys.
Yeah, actually, this month marks our 2-year anniversary of first meeting at the New York Comic Con.
Wow!
Yeah, at a Valiant Comics panel.
That is.
Did you know then? Was it like
spark?
I knew.
I knew
as well.
Nice, good answer. Go with it, Dave. Go with it. Go with it.
Don't ruin it now.
Let me explain the story.
You should listen to them because they're like two really annoying Cupids.
Yeah.
I was urged to go to this panel. By a friend of mine who used to work at Acclaim. He's like, go to this Valiant panel.
You're going to meet the woman that you love.
Yeah.
You
didn't actually say that, but sort of like, go to this Valiant panel. It'll be great. And I used to read Valiant comics. And at the time, my landlord had also worked for Valiant comics as the art production guru. And he had this reputation of making the editors and assistant editors cry whenever they'd get something wrong. So during the middle of this panel, I stood up and asked the question, is it true that this guy used to make people cry? And everybody on the panel was like, yes, he used to make us cry, but we always learned from it. And then apparently at that moment, when I stood up and asked the question, Valerie was like, dear God, if there were anything in this world.
That's a little much.
That's actually what I thought.
Really?
I did. And I wasn't going
from some guy asking a question.
Yes. It's just,
have you ever seen
it? No, discredit.
Have you ever seen the way he asks questions?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's something about that.
It's entrancing.
Yeah.
Yes. So
that's amazing.
Then after the panel was over, as I was waiting to meet this guy, Jeff Gomez, who I was set to go introduce myself to, Valerie pushes some guy out of the way.
Yeah.
Nice. Pushes him out of the way to actively talk to me as I'm waiting.
That's...
And she's like, hi, blah, 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 blah.
I really like your question.
And then I was like, is it true that you know these guys? And I happen to know, because I was a Valiant Comics nerd, everybody she used to work with. I was like, yeah, I know Fabian. Yeah, I know Evan Skolnick. I know this guy. This guy is my landlord. And so she apparently thought that I had some sort of good pedigree because I knew the guys that worked at Valiant. But
that old Valiant pedigrees.
Of a Valiant pedigree.
That's all the ladies. And from there, though, you know, she gave me her number on a hastily written postcard. And 3 days later, I had called her.
Good job on the 3 days. Nice work.
3 days later, I had called her. We chatted a bit.
Yes.
Then, we'll go to that.
This is you're really on the spot here.
I know all this. I know the days. Sadly.
Did you say Saturday?
No, it wasn't Saturday.
That is
exactly. I know all the days.
Good guess.
Saturday. Our first date was March 23rd, and it was a Wednesday. That's not the point.
Dangerously cute, getting dangerously darling.
I'm just trying to back away from that stuff. We chit-chatted and met. Like, I brought her to some parties, and finally I broke down, and I wasn't sure whether or not we were at that sort of friend stage or the maybe girlfriend-boyfriend stage, so I asked her out on a date. We went to the Irish Rogue, which is right in Midtown. And then I was like, oh, really nice. Had a very good time. And Valerie had said, you know, the last time I was on a date, and that was kind of like my cue.
Yeah.
I was like, okay.
Conscious choice on your part.
I was like, last time I was on a date. And I said, okay. And then the bill came, and she didn't offer to split, so I said, okay, I'm paying the bill. That's
otherwise move.
And then when we went to go see our...
You shouldn't have waited. You should have grabbed the check and be like, let me...
Well, I was trying to figure out whether or not it was still date-ish or friendish territory. And then when we went to go see our first movie, Ghost Rider.
Ghost Rider.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
I will always remember Ghost Rider as an awesome movie because it was our first date.
It's a really good date movie.
Yeah.
What?
As the credits rolled, we kissed for the first time.
No way! You were like, thank God that's over.
I feel like my life is slipping away. I feel like if there are any more of this movie...
I can't believe you made it all the way to the credits.
Yeah, we made it all the way to the credits. And so
he's not talking about the kissing, by the way.
My third cue that it was a date was like, let's sit in the back of the theater.
Oh, nice.
I was like, okay, that was being, I think this is officially a date.
You're the real puppet master. I can just say, in my quick judgment here.
And then so on our second date...
you bought me original art?
My friend Danielle Corsetto drew a painting, or not a painting, but a sketch, an ink sketch of Supergirl saying, I'm more than just an occasional superheroine. And, you know, Supergirl flying through the air, and looked kind of like Valerie with her little short cropped hair.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what happened on the 3rd through 56th date?
On the 3rd date!
One thing you were telling me this backstage, you guys are going to be featured as a comic book couple in Penthouse.
Oh,
what? Where was I with this?
Penthouse. I never thought this would happen to me. Yes.
What? Yeah. Now, first of all, Penthouse has articles.
Yes.
Very informative articles.
They teach you not just about love, but about intercourse and others.
Oh, man.
Oh.
Who's writing the letter?
It's not actually a letter. It's actually an article.
Nice.
It's an article. I mean, I don't want to give too much away from the...
Don't spoil it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yes, we're going to be in Penthouse. The issue comes out in July.
Cool.
Yes. Wow, that's cool. I'll have to pick that up.
It's good to be subscribed.
There's things that Valerie does in a costume. That's all I'm saying. No, kidding. That was a joke. It's a joke.
We'll see.
So let's talk about comic books, you guys. So, Dave, I believe congratulations are in order for you.
Thank you very much. High Moon today was nominated as the Webcomic of the Year, 2008.
Hey! Yeah!
So Steve Ellis and I are very excited about that, and High Moon 3 has officially begun. It is pretty dark and twisted and awesome, but it goes on, it's 4 pages a week every Monday, so the way you can remember that is
Monday is Moon Day.
Well, that's good. Oh, did so. You just come up with that?
I did. That's why. Yeah.
You basically run Zuda Comics now, right?
Yeah, not so much, but there is not so much. I have editors that I have to like answer to, but yeah, I mean we've got 150 million views, and you know we're doing pretty well. Our trade comes out in October, and when we were at the New York Comic Con, we had an incredibly successful booth. We had a custom wanted posters that people could come in and get their sketches filled out, a shooting range, and we were selling like werewolf teeth and stuff.
Yeah.
Like that. That's good stuff.
I got one.
Yeah.
Cool.
It turns into a werewolf tooth during the daytime, but then at night, it turns into a werewolf tooth.
Oh.
That's really complicated.
Yeah.
Finally, let's talk to you about Cloak and Dagger. So that's something we're pretty excited about.
Yeah, we love Cloak and Dagger.
Cloak and Dagger fans.
Well, I'm really excited too. It should be out by the end of the year. Mm-hmm. And it's a new twist on an old classic Marvel couple. And three scripts in, the art's coming in, the color's coming in, and it's gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous book, and it's a little different, and I hope people dig it.
So what stage are you on with it right now?
I'm done with the first three scripts.
Okay.
Yeah. And so now we're just having the art come in and just admiring it. So, really
so what's your take on Cloak & Dagger? I know we talked to you, I think, before the series ever came out. But
right.
What's changed from your initial conception of it to how you're coming out of series three issues in?
I have to say, in a way, you know, it's funny because this is like my first major, I guess, like comic book work. It kind of writes itself a little bit as the issues go by. The characters and the story really develop.
Yeah.
If I say too much, I will probably give away like key points.
Sure.
But it's at its heart, it's a story about codependency and relationships. And then around that's always really cool monstery stuff.
Well, I think that's something that's really gotten out of Cloak and Dagger over the years is they were always, you know, for those who don't know, they got their powers from abusing drugs,
yep.
Essentially. So, and then,
it doesn't work as well in real life. It works
a little bit.
It works for like an hour or two. And then I can't get the power to stay.
So is that something you're getting back to at all?
The drug. I mean, there are other addictions.
Yeah.
There
so it's not
going to
be like a lickable cocaine cover.
No,
it's not
maybe.
Even cocaine.
Maybe the fourth cover is as sales warrant it. But yeah, it's more
wow.
Emotional addictions, relationship addictions, I think.
Cool. Yeah. Well, we'll definitely be looking forward to that. Let's move on with the first section of our show, which we like to call the stack. Unbelievable. We did it again. First issue we're going to talk about is Batman 686. This is by Neil Gaiman with art by Andy Kubert. It's the start of whatever happened to the Caped Crusader. What did you guys think? What did you think about this story?
It was very good. I like to talk about it in comparison to Final Crisis, where it's a story about stories and the way we kind of take in the characters. But this is all the mistakes from Final Crisis are not made here. This is done really well.
Well, I think even more apropos, it's all the mistakes of Batman RIP.
Yeah.
Because the whole idea of that was Morrison deconstructing the idea that Batman has been around for, you know, 60 or 7 years or whatever it is, and essentially saying, well, everything is true. How do you deal with that? And I think this does the same thing, but it does it much smarter and much better.
Yeah.
I disagree. I don't think it was as amazing as you guys were saying it is. It starts off really good, but then it just kind of goes into a, hey, what if kind of thing that at this point I'm a little kind of
well that's not hard. It's not like a what if, I think it's just like playing with
more
the
like
sword.
It's like the
yeah we're just like what
is this a continuity, because I just saw some spoilery things in there.
It's unclear at this point.
My heart is fluttering. I'm like, wow, certain things have happened. And
It's telling it like a story, so it's unclear in this first issue exactly what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
But you do see things like a lot of the characters throughout the panels, and this is Andy Kubert does such an amazing job of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Joker, he draws almost every incarnation of the Joker, including the animated Joker at certain points.
Mm-hmm.
So it gives us this very weird dreamlike quality. So it doesn't seem like it's necessarily in continuity,
mm-hmm.
But maybe it is.
It could be.
Yeah.
It seems all very fleeting, as though this is like, you know, how they talk about your life flashes before your eyes,
mm-hmm.
right before you die. And that's sort of, I mean, just
not having read it, but just observing the brilliance of it, it seems to definitely have that quality of it. Because it's definitely, I don't want to say it's a little bit of everywhere, but I mean, like looking at some of these panels, they're just so gorgeous and captivating.
The art's really beautiful.
It's amazing. I think Andy outdid himself.
Something to talk about with this is, Kuberts are not known for necessarily, well, Andy and Adam at least are not known necessarily for being on time with stuff. And the second issue of this, even though they announced it months and months and months ago, has already been delayed. Do you think it's worth it, or should something...
It's much better to wait and have it be a great story, I would think. Right? Why would you be like, put it out, I don't care! Just give it to me! Make it bad!
That's what I feel like most comic fans feel that way.
It depends how long the wait is. If you're waiting a week, that's one thing. But if you're waiting for the fourth issue of Daredevil Target, which I guess never came out, you can only wait so long before you're like, I'm not waiting a year for part two. That's all I'm saying.
Are people like, man, Wolverine Hulk, Ultimate Wolverine Hulk, fuck that. They're like, no, the guy's writing a TV show. Like, if he does it, he does it. If he doesn't, he doesn't.
I think people do feel betrayed by it. I personally
do. If you're going to invest your money in something, you would hope that they can put it out on a reasonable time. I mean, like you're saying, if it's delayed a week, I'm not going to get upset. But at the same time, it's like, I've invested time and money into reading this series, at least to start
with. Yeah, but you only invested in what you have in your hand. You didn't invest in the future issue.
Justin, you emotionally invested in the future issue by being compelled to want the next one. They ideally would have done such a great job, they will lead you wanting more.
Right.
And so, yes, you're emotionally invested in what should come.
This does not leave me wanting more.
Wow. He'll be fine no matter how long it takes.
Yeah, because I know, I was like, that's not Batman there. He's in a cave hanging out with an old dude drawing bats.
Good point.
What? That's
a fantasy. He actually hit his head.
No, that's actually where Batman is.
And the final question.
I would say pick this up. 100%.
Definitely pick it up. And the second issue has only been delayed to March 18th, I think.
So it's not that long. So as just making an issue about nothing. Let's talk about Thor 600, a mega-sized issue returning to the actual numbering of the series. What did you guys think about this issue?
I thought it was great. This series has been getting better and better. Fantastic.
I originally was not that impressed, but the second go-around looking at this, I liked it a lot more.
What did you like about it? Better about it the second time through?
Well, the first time around, I was like, well, it's a dollar more. And I was like, why am I paying a dollar when it's just got older?
At the second time through, you were like...
That dollar.
Well, I'm not talking about the first time, second time through at this point. I was just saying that my first initial reaction was like, I'm paying a dollar more, what am I getting? And then it's like, oh, there's reprints in the back. And I was like, well, don't charge me a dollar and just put shit you already put out already in the back of it. The second time around, at first I was like, because they switched point of views, which I thought was kind of jarring at first. But the second time around, I was like, oh, it's actually very enjoyable. Yeah. And then having all 600 covers in the back was pretty awesome.
Basically, for those of you who didn't read it, this is what most of JMS's run has been leading up to. Loki, who is now a lady, has manipulated Thor to this place where he ends up killing his own grandfather, who is named Bor. That's it.
Right. And then he gets, to kind of spoil a little bit, he gets banished from the big castle. And now he has to go wander the earth.
Yeah. And then there's
and now he's going to be like, gotta find my castle in the sky.
Yeah. I don't know what song you're talking about.
And there's fun little mini Thor.
I love
Pippin. You're making a Pippin reference?
Yeah.
Man, I don't know.
You really like mini Marvels.
Was great because it really explained to me what Thor's been doing all this time in a really easy to follow way. So I really appreciated it for that.
That's good. What did you think about the rest of the issue?
Go ahead. What did you think of the rest of it?
I like the rest of the issue. I really like the mini Marvels.
See that? They're a total couple right there. Oh, I'm sorry, baby. Go ahead.
Yeah.
You wish we acted more like
that?
You finish.
About 10 years ago, Marvel put out the 100-page monsters. I don't know if you remember those, but it was like a new story in the front, selective reprints in the back that sort of put all the entire story into context for you. And I really felt that this was sort of a spiritual predecessor to that. I mean, you get all the coverage, Yeah, it's something that follows something else.
Oh, okay. Right,
in theory, like in thematic, you know, lineage.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Oh, I remember. Castle in the Clouds is Les Miserables. Corner of the Sky is Pippin.
I don't know. I don't know what. Oh,
I didn't want to. All right,
I appreciate it. No, I always do that.
Oh, heckler. Big heckler. Oh,
yeah. Whoever that is.
Hey, let him finish his thought, Alex.
I think my thought was more important.
I think this is a really great book. I love the Stan Lee story with David Aja. I forgot about that.
It was really good.
Yeah, I thought it was really great to see Stan Lee come back and do something after the last Fantastic Four story that he wrote, and do like something that was like, hey, I'm 85. I can still write Thor. And I thought it was great.
Yeah. I think it's really fun. It's a fun package. It's really enjoyable.
It was worth the extra dollar, certainly.
Exactly.
Yeah, definitely.
Yes, but especially when we're all getting very concerned about comic book prices, it's nice to see something that's worth it.
Yeah, I absolutely agree.
Cool. Let's move on and talk about Rebels number one. This is following up on L-E-G-I-O-N, Legion, that came out in what?
A while ago.
Can you explain anything that went on to me?
Well, the green guy is a cop in space.
Okay.
Oh, I thought you said something else.
Space cop.
Yeah.
Cop.
He's a real cock. He's a real jerk.
He is actually kind of a jerk.
Yeah. He's a space cop, and then there are a bunch of other characters that he has to fight. And then Supergirl's also there.
I don't know why I didn't understand that. I sure did.
I like this because I like the Brainiac Supergirl relationship. I read the Legion when she was up. She was in the future with Legion
up in time.
You know, and so I like that, and I like seeing that again here, even though it's a different Brainiac. But if you don't know all that history, I think this is really hard to pick up.
This is a little obtuse. Just like
also, that. I read the Adam Strange series, which has the Omega Men, who also show up here.
Charlton Heston?
Yeah.
What?
No, what? Yeah. See, the thing is, I regularly read comics, and I have no idea what you just said.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I think it starts off, it's a funny start where the first thing an alien says when he lands on the planet is, excuse me, where's your bathroom? I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah.
And then from there, it gets horrible.
Yeah. I don't know about this. I feel like, it was a little needlessly confusing and over the top. As opposed to Captain Britain and the MI-13, which of course had Dracula and Doctor Doom on the moon shooting vampire missiles at Earth. Totally easy to understand. Very straightforward.
Vampire missiles?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm joking, but this is a totally awesome issue. Captain Britain and the MI-13 is totally fun. And the idea of Dracula on the moon taking vampires and shooting them at Earth to attack specific
targets. It's really hilarious because they're missiles, but their vampires just leaning forward. It was like, oh, they're going to hit that plane. And part of me is like, I wonder if they'll just stick it in the plane, and then people in the passengers will be like, hi, vampire. And be like, hi, I'm going to explode any minute now. Just don't wait for it. But instant explosion.
Yeah. When I don't pick this book up in the store, I cry.
He does.
Wow.
You should pick it up in the store.
Yeah, I do, but I only give myself 3 comics, and sometimes this comes out, and other comics have to.
Why only 3?
Because I'd like to be on a budget.
We don't know what that means.
We're millionaires. We rarely talk about the fortune that we sit on.
Our parents,
our parents, we're brothers. We've never gotten into our history.
Oh, you. Come here.
We're going to get out of here.
Your parents went down outside the screening of Zorro, and then you guys all decided to put on, like, blazers.
The way we decided to was sitting on some couches and talking about comic books.
Our parents got shot outside of a comic convention. So now we're going to conquer this industry from the
same comic convention where we met and fell in love?
Yeah. Yeah, it's still a fresh wound.
No.
This is a great book.
It is.
Seamless.
But that's funny, though, that you can say 3 comics. I mean, I have such a comic book problem that, and this show just enables the shit out of me. It's. I'll be like, okay, only $50.
No, we get a discount at Midtown Comics because they're awesome and everyone should buy the comics there.
Yeah.
But we get a discount, we go in, I buy 3, you buy 3.
But when I go by myself, I end up with like 12, 15, 20 comics. And like a toy and like magazine.
Right. Whereas I'm like, you can buy three, I buy three, we'll read each other's books. But usually, yeah, I mean, like, there are certain, it's three comics a week, so 12 comics, I buy 12 comics a month, and that's not too shabby.
Big question. Do your collections intermingle?
It depends.
Your brains intermingle.
No. But our, we have very different theories about what equals a good comic and what doesn't.
At least to keep the Claremont away from.
Yeah, I don't touch the Claremont.
Don't let that shit get anywhere.
Yeah. It's like, but, like, for example, when it's research, we have, like, in Valerie's office, we keep all the research stuff.
Yeah.
So if it's, like, I'm a big handbook junkie, so all the handbooks will go in that office. But if it's, like, I like New Warriors, so I keep that stuff away from Valerie.
And she'll destroy it.
Yeah. It's sort of like my.
And then my goal is to, like, one day write the New Warriors and just totally redo it.
Oh man!
Oh wow!
Yeah. Make them all old and quiet.
Yeah.
The old Warriors.
The old Warriors.
And quiet.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be. I'm gonna green light that.
You have that power.
Yeah, have I not mentioned that?
Yeah.
There's a lot of secrets coming out of the show.
Anyway, this book is great.
It's awesome.
And we keep talking about how it's supposedly canceled, but apparently it's not. So go buy it. So it's not canceled.
Right. Oh yeah, we have a campaign going on.
Yeah, oh yeah, that's
right. We have a campaign going on. We want you guys to go teabag Marvel. What we want you to do is send a teabag to Marvel.
Who greenlit this?
Because they're English. They're English.
Yeah, so they do tea.
So send a teabag to Marvel and tell them you want Captain Britain to continue.
Why not send them, like, pot noodle or digestive biscuits or, like, something?
Well, because I think tea
is
a nice reaction.
I think there's something to this teabag thing.
I don't want to.
Yeah, teabag. Send them a teabag.
Yeah.
Okay, well, teabag Marvel. Done.
Yeah. We want everybody to go out and teabag Marvel, please. Incognito number two. Pete, you did not like this issue. Why not?
No. Hey, now. The first issue, I was a little disappointed at how much it was like the other series, which I'm completely...
Criminal,
right. It had the same look, same feel to it. This one
did
a good job.
I mean, what you're right about, because it had the same author and same artist.
Hey, you should be good enough at your job, you can make it look
very
different.
Like we do every week.
Woody.
Totally slammed us.
But no, I really like this one a lot better because I felt like it really had a different feel from the criminal look.
Yeah, it's nice. I like the first scene. So the main bad guy's in a super secret jail, and this guy comes in who's his lawyer, but turns out the lawyer's like his assistant. And they have a conversation that the police people can hear, and they have one psychically, and the bubbles appear next to each other, which I've never seen done in comics. Usually it's separate.
I thought it was very cool. This is really fun and a really smart series. It's definitely, they're going for a pulp feel, you know, with both this and Criminal, they even say that. And it's supposed to feel a little over the top, a little cheesy, a little, pulp. That's pretty much what it is.
Well, if you compare this even beyond Criminal, if you compare this to Sleeper, that they worked on together for Wildstorm, I mean, there's a lot of pulp in everything that Brubaker does, even down to his Captain America stuff. But I think that this is certainly, out of all the projects he works on, certainly the most authentic. And if you're not even familiar with the pulps, I mean, I love the stuff that Jess Nevins does in back. I mean, last issue was Shadow.
Yeah.
This one's it's Doc Savage. And, you know, it really sort of harkens back to the foundations of what made Superman Superman, you know? It really sort of touches on that. And I just think it's an incredibly smart book, and I think Ed Brubaker is my Hollywood boyfriend.
Wow.
What does that mean?
It means that if I were to have a male writer crush, it would be Ed Brubaker.
Awesome.
It's not if you moved to Hollywood, he would be your boyfriend.
that's what I thought it meant.
I mean, he's my celebrity writing. I have a bromance with Ed Brubaker.
Oh, okay. He has a bromance with anybody with a beard.
Yeah.
Like Josh Bean.
No, that's it. That's it.
Let's move on to talk about Fables number 81. Yeah. Justin, you like this issue, right?
This series is great. It keeps building and everything means something all the way forward. And so there's this new big bad villain. And my theory, if I can go into it.
Oh boy, here we go.
The fables in this universe, the most powerful ones are the ones that we remember the most. The Mundy's humans. And so I think the big bad villain is the Tooth Fairy, because he's one of the most powerful, the one that we most talk about in modern culture.
You also forgot to mention he eats teeth.
Yeah, he also eats teeth.
Yeah.
So that's another reason why I think it's a Tooth Fairy.
That's
my theory.
Fables
what a good theory.
Fables is fantastic. I even love the, they do different borders for different scenes. Just a lot of attention to detail, a lot of layers in the writing. It's just fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, this is always good. I feel like, I'm not going to ruin it for you. There's a little bit of a event that happens with one of the main characters since the beginning of the series in this issue. It didn't hit me as emotionally hard as I would have wanted it to.
Did you just say emotionally hard?
Yep.
Okay.
It's like spiritual precedent.
Okay.
Predecessor.
Yeah. Which I feel like is important, but whatever. Pick up this issue; it's a great series. This is also James Jean's last cover.
Did you guys go to the exhibit where they had?
No, I wasn't.
It was fantastic. It was three rooms of pure joy.
Wow.
I mean, really. I mean, it was exceptionally. I mean, like you see these covers that James Jean does, and they're gorgeous. But when you actually see the art, he just did a showing down in Chelsea, and it ended like right before Comic-Con. And it was gorgeous. Just standing in front of the stuff really sort of was much more emotionally evocative than just even looking at a cover. Because all the covers, or several of the covers were there, and you just had that feeling like, wow, this guy's good. What's he doing comics? Yeah, so anyway. But yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. It's too bad, because he's definitely, he has been the look of the series.
Yeah, I don't know what they're going to do next.
Do they have covers lined up? The cover artists lined up?
No, they're going to have no covers.
They're all
no, who are they having? I think
Tom.
What?
Do I know?
Yeah, I was thinking it was Tom. It'd be like a guy like Tom Cocker, but I don't know.
I don't know. Last but not least, we're going to talk about The Walking Dead number 58. We talk about the series a lot on the show,
I think,
and we've definitely been talking about the evolution of the series since number 50.
Yeah.
One thing I will say that was kind of surprising for me with this particular issue has nothing to do with the issue. I've gone from not picking up this book to, with this issue, I moved it to the top of my must-read list.
Wow.
Yeah, so...
That's weird, because I feel like this was a weak issue. I've been picking up Walking Dead constantly. It's definitely on my must-have. But I felt like this issue was just them sitting behind the car crying and talking about their feelings.
What's happened, man?
Everyone's dead.
Everyone. You, in this comic book, you're dead.
That'd be sweet if I was dead in that comic book.
You are.
I'm not.
They've been teasing this issue as the unthinkable happens and implying that Rick's son is going to die. This is kind of an anti-spoiler. His son doesn't die, but instead they deal with all these other people who sons have, or what if your son died, and how would that hit you emotionally? And I thought it was really well done. I thought it was one of Kirkman's best issues of anything in a really long time.
Definitely.
Well, it's a little late in the game to be talking about how hard it is to kill someone you love. They've been shooting people they know for issues now. And now all of a sudden it's like, well, if it's my son, what the fuck? It's a zombie, man. You got to shoot it to survive. That's why you've lasted this long.
What if I was a zombie? Would you?
I would no hesitate. You could show up one day drooling a little bit and I'd just be like, ah!
He does have a loaded gun most times.
I'll say, if nothing else, props to Robert Kirkman for doing this book for 5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's, I mean, they're 2 issues away from issue 60. You know, I think it's kept it, I might not have always been into it as much as other story arcs and stuff, but man, that's something really to be proud of. That's amazing.
Especially he is proud of it.
Yeah.
cool. So definitely pick this up.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
And it's finally getting back to kind of its roots. They go to his house. It's nice. It feels like it's going back to where it was like the best.
Yeah, absolutely. Pick it up. That's it for the stack.
Huh?
All right, so it's time for our next section, which is my favorite section, because you guys make it up. It's your audience questions. For that, we're going to go to Boothman.
Boothman!
Morning.
Morning.
That rope gets shorter and shorter.
He's hiking it up.
He lives in that booth.
Yeah, right. It's great. All right. So why did you make the creative decision to use a manga artist on Cloak & Dagger versus a traditional one?
Ooh, good question.
Ooh.
Well, I can feel that.
Okay, so I want to hear your answer.
I don't know.
You know, it wasn't a decision whether to make it manga or not manga. I just saw samples of her work, and I said, this is just beautiful, vibrant work. And I think it really will gel with what my conception is of the book, and that's why I chose it.
Who's the artist?
Irene Flores, who's done work for Tokyo Pop.
Has there been like a fan backlash to having the manga art?
I think some people don't know what to expect. You know, they're like, you know, is this a manga or is this not a manga? But really, I just chose it because Irene's art is just incredibly gorgeous.
Well, and before that too, their appearance in Cloak and Dagger wasn't. Now, the appearance in Cloak and Dagger was in Runaways before Valerie pitched the series, which had a sort of a more manga.
It did
flavor.
Fit that sort of theme, like
right.
The Runaways, and then Spider-Man Loves Mary Jane and those books. So it does fit that sort of thing as well.
Yeah. Cool. Raise your hand if you ask a question. Pete's going to bring you a present. And let's get the next question.
How did you come up with the concept for Jaime?
Oh, how did I come up with the concept? Well, basically, I got Alex, Justin, and Pete drunk one night, and they're like, that would be a great webcomic, guys. And they're like, Hi Moon. No,
that's the story of how we came up with Hi Moon.
And,
wait a second! What? Man!
I feed on your success. One day I was... just the basic premise is that I grew up in Civil War town, playing role-playing games and loving
horror.
Wow.
You're so
what
happened?
Not allowed to say that. How nerdy can you get?
Plus, that was pretty casual.
I grew up in a Civil War town and originally wanted to do a story about like vampires and werewolves in the Civil War, sort of the North-South kind of stuff. And as that idea sort of developed, I was like, oh yeah, you know what? Maybe move it past the Civil War, because I thought that dynamic I'd created was kind of blah. And I said, oh, you know, move it into the West, and I was always inspired by old-time radio programs like The Lone Ranger and Gunsmoke and Have Gun Will Travel. And then the concept evolved from there with the basic theme of an unchanging man and a changing time. And that's sort of the general basis. That's the theme that sort of fuels the series.
When did you come up with the title? Because that's a pretty killer title.
I was totally delirious on epilepsy medication.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you were just like raving?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Same words?
I was like, Hi Moon! That's what I call it, Hi Moon!
I can't believe that was your answer. That's awesome.
Yeah, and I told my roommate, he's like, what is it? Hi Moon. Oh, I'm West, you got Hi Moon! He's like, I was totally delirious. It was like 5 years ago I had the idea, and he was like, okay, crazy man, type it out and shut up.
Now, I have a question for you about Hi Moon, which might be a little controversial. Have you heard about the new series Dead Irons at all?
I have heard about the series Dead Irons.
What is your reaction to the series Dead Irons?
My reaction is that a rising tide raises all ships.
Oh. Oh. Very nice. What's the concept for Dead Irons?
Vampires and werewolves in the Old West.
Interesting. Similar.
I don't know. I think they're different.
You don't want to sink a couple of those ships?
No. See, but like there are other series. For example, there's Matthew Maxwell does a series called Strange Ways that runs on Robot 6. And his is a werewolf western as well. And, you know, there are others very similar. Like, there's a book called The Legend of Joe Moon. And another series, you know, there's lots of different series about that. But I really feel that, you know, what's good for us is good for them, and what's good for them is good for us. Because I really think at this point, supernatural westerns are sort of their own genre. And our story is different than their story, and that's fine. All
right, cool.
And we were there first.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's get the next question.
I think this is for everybody. How do you feel about Deadpool and Wolverine Origins?
Pete?
Well, Pete, you're a big Deadpool fan.
Well, yes, thank you. Yes.
That was a piece of information.
Well, it felt like there was a little kind of like...
If I was like, yeah, Pete, you're a real asshole.
Yeah, that's exactly what it's talking about.
No.
Is that what you said?
No. Did I?
I could have sworn. All right. What makes me excited about it is because... the actor who was portraying Ryan Reynolds, A, I think is funny, and B, he was really into it. So I hope that he's going to bring something to it that's going to make it enjoyable. But what I'm upset about is the fact that why I wanted a whole movie just Wolverine. You know, there's a lot of other characters that they're putting in this movie.
Too much taken.
Yeah, don't take away from, you know.
I think he'll be in most of it. I don't think they're
going to
be
sure
like,
he is, but I just.
They're not,
I
mean, the opening shots aren't going to be like, well, see you later, Wolverine. And then he walks off into the distance.
I would walk right out of the
theater. I think it'll be.
I think that Wolverine isn't. It's always been Wolverine's story as part of being one of many subjects. You know, I mean, going back to the 90s and even sort of slightly before that, there was always like this idea that Wolverine wasn't alone in what he was feeling and how he was brought up. So I think having Wolverine with a bunch of other characters like Deadpool and Sabretooth and even Gambit, you know, sort of adds nuance to his story and why Wolverine stands out above all these other characters. Now, in terms of Deadpool, I think Deadpool's fantastic. And I think Ryan Reynolds was great as Hannibal King, and I think he'd make a great Deadpool. Yeah.
Well, Alex, you always talk about how you think Wolverine is only like a supporting character.
Yeah.
And so you think that's maybe, do you like the idea?
I think it's a little weird how they're positioning the movie. I do actually kind of agree with Pete that if you're going to call it X-Men Origins Wolverine, that you should focus it on Wolverine, and it should almost be like Wolverine in Japan or trekking across the countryside or something like that. But
fucking sweet.
As it is, I think it does make sense to have him working off of other characters.
Yeah.
Right, because you need that. I mean, because people aren't... While you want people to go to the movie to go see Wolverine, you want superpowered fights. You want to see Wolverine tussle with somebody else. You don't want to see, oh, Wolverine versus ninjas and soldiers, blah, blah, blah. No, you want
to go
to that movie to go see Wolverine battle Sabretooth.
Right, but he's going to be in there. They're intricate.
And you want to see Sabretooth to establish the menace of Sabretooth. You want to see him gut Gambit. You want to see him, like, take out Deadpool and kill Silver Fox. You want to see all that stuff. So then Wolverine, when Wolverine finally fights Sabretooth, there's, like, so much more emotional baggage that goes on in their final confrontation as Hugh Jackman and Liv Schreiber go, rah, 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 rah. That's exactly
I wish you were making the movie.
That's exactly where the movie, I think, is structured the way it is, with the guest stars and everything. You want to see the superpower tussles? And yes, I agree that I think it might be a more compelling movie, but I think it would sell very well.
All right, I'm sorry. Rachel, after you ask the question, Pete's going to bring you a gift, and that's it for your audience questions. All right, next section we are going to turn to what we like to call the Week in Geek.
Yeah.
Yay. First thing we're going to talk about, as we always talk about, is the latest episode.
The cross that we bear, the burden.
Is the latest episode of Heroes.
Whoa. Is that a custom-made Peter Petrelli screensaver? Yeah,
I have a bit of time this afternoon. So.
That cost $7,000.
Because that looks like something from the CW.
That is a fan-made piece of art for Peter Petrelli.
I want to know what the fans thought about having the flowers there. That's a little ridiculous. The umbrella.
Did you guys hear, though, Milo Ventimiglia and Hayden Panettiere broke up?
Yeah.
No! What?
Yeah.
I hope the quality of the show doesn't suffer.
Well, when Jeff Love left, you know, everything just went downhill.
Yeah, Jeff Love broke them up when he left. Classic Love. Man.
I'll take her hot.
Well, anyway, it was a bad episode last night. So
boring. The thing that I thought was the funniest is there's a big confrontation between Siler, like, has this friend, this kid that shoots heat out of his
protege.
Heat. Yeah.
Who melts people.
And they're running from...
Yeah, it's Magneto and Pyro from X-Men 2. So.
Nice. They're running from all the government agents. And then they're in this diner, and they're like, we gotta get out of here. And they jump in. Their getaway car is like a Subaru station wagon. And then all the government guys are like, let's chase them. And they get in like a Prius or something. I'm like, what? Where's the budget for this show? They're driving around like the security guard in the set car or something. the government agents, they don't have any SUV or something. I was like, what? Who's paying attention?
I think it's everybody has to suffer through the same financial and economic crisis.
Yeah.
I think the government was kind of like, ah, well, we could drive these, but
that's the thing. Heroes has always reflected what's going on in our world.
That's what's just true. It's kind of really reflective.
Don't mess with
me. Just end up with a straight face.
I'm having a hard time with the microwave kid. Like, I just didn't buy how evil he was.
He, you know he's evil. Like, he kind of sounds
like it is a very evil way of saying
that's, yeah. When you're evil, you don't really pronounce your words very much.
You don't have to.
Yeah. That's how evil you are. Anyway, don't watch the show. Next thing we're going to talk about, Jonah Hex movie.
Oh, yeah.
Jonah Hex movie. Josh Brolin is going to be Jonah Hex. Nice. And John Malkovich is going to be the villain chasing after it. Or possibly good guy villain. You guys looking forward to this movie?
Will it be werewolves?
Yes.
No.
The Rising Tide.
Oh, yeah, Rising Tide. Yeah. Yes, I can't wait to see this movie. Well, you're a big Jonah Hex fan.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan. I'm very excited about this. And what's nice is if it's anything like the comic, it'll be a one-and-done movie. It'll all just encompass one storyline. There won't be a to-be-continued or anything we have to watch.
How many movies outside of Back to the Future end with, like, to be continued? Come back in 3 years.
Matrix.
Yeah, Matrix.
And some others.
And
they got you.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
All the step up.
How do you think this is going to be sold? Also, I mean, this is honestly.
What? All the step up movies are to be continued.
That's not true. That's not true.
I was thinking you're a fan of
He makes the step up, right? Did you hear him? He wasn't listening, and then he heard step up, and was like, what? And turned toward you like you just, like, the Lord.
The connection between Step Up and Step Up to the Streets is Channing Tatum coming back.
Wow! Wow!
That this is
ridiculous.
Not a bit. This is not a bit.
Oh my
real.
God.
There's really good dancing in this.
I honestly, anyways. I'm a big fan of the comic. And I think that I think it's going to be sold as a Western, sort of in that.
Yeah, I hope so.
No, but I mean, they were talking
rather than as a comic book.
Right. Well, yeah. I don't think it's going to be sold as like based on the great hit graphic novel from Jimmy Palmiotti, Justin Gray. I think it's going to be much more like straight up Western, and then sort of like Road to Perdition. Like Road to Perdition wasn't billed as based on the graphic novel.
You should do voiceover work, by the way.
Well, what's the take on it then? What's different about this than any other Western?
I actually think it really depends a lot on whether Watchmen does really well. If Watchmen does incredibly, it definitely will be sold as based on the graphic novel.
I think
absolutely.
Watchmen is going to do incredibly.
Then it will be absolutely sold. There you go. Heard it here first for folks.
I'm a villain.
I know.
I knew it.
Cool. So, hang on. Last thing we're going to very quickly talk about, since we already discussed it briefly, is Wolverine. Wolverine movies.
Hugh Jackman.
He's not blue or yellow.
This is going to be a great movie. It's really heroic of you guys actually to come out tonight because they're showing the last Wolverine promo over the past two nights, and including tonight, three nights. They've been showing 3-minute promos from the Wolverine movie. Now, here's the other thing, is they've come out and said that the movie is much, much less than 2 hours, and it's not going to be any longer than that. So assuming it's around 90 minutes, at 3 minutes per promo, you've already seen 10% of the movie.
Oh, man.
Well, I think the promos are probably going to be cut with interstitials, so like, kind of like, hey, this is like, you know, they'll be cut. Like, this, you'll have a scene, then they'll cut it for something.
Having watched the first two promos, the second one follows directly plot-wise on the first one. Wow. So I don't know what's going to happen with the third one. But
why are
they selling it like this?
Yeah, why are they saying, so don't worry, it's not more than 2 hours?
I think because Watchmen's going to be 3 hours. Mm. Mm. I think it's, yeah, I mean, literally.
Well, also so that people don't go and see and they're like, oh, it's
I think
over?
It'll be, I think the final running time will be like 88 minutes.
Yeah.
And it'll be like, I'll be honest with you, I think it'll be like 88 minutes and, yeah, it'll be under 90 and perfect chunks of time. Yeah, I think it'll be great. I think it'll be a fun movie, but I think it'll be like watching an MTV video directed by David Fincher.
Yeah. Awesome. I wish I had written this down, but there was a great comment on the superhero hype boards about the time where somebody was really angry and they were like, I can't believe this is going to be less than 2 hours. This should be much longer. This should be 2 hours and 15 minutes long. And they were very, very specific about it, and that was the only way the movie would work.
Yeah.
And I bring that up because I agree.
Wow.
I think it should be a, you know what, I tell you what, I think the movie should be, how many issues of Wolverine have there been?
1,000.
Yeah. 1,000 hour long.
I don't know, it feels that way.
No, we should definitely do, I think,
they should tell every Wolverine story. It's only fair.
I could sit through a 4-hour Wolverine movie, easy.
Would you really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
You're married, right?
Yeah.
Oh, how that
why is it so hard to believe?
How'd that go with spending all of your Valentine's Day money on comic books?
For those of you that weren't here last week,
what are we doing this for?
We learned that Pete didn't have money to buy comic books, and then he got a card from his aunt that said,
Aunt Marge,
that said, Pete, here's some money to take Lori out for Valentine's Day, and he spent it on comic books.
Well, luckily there was enough money where I could
buy her a bag of candy and then go read your comic.
I went to the grocery store and I said, pick some out, baby, I'll make it for you.
Wow. And that's it for the week in Geek. All right, we'll stop for the next session with the trivia. And for that, we're going to turn over to Chief LePage.
Yeah. Woo! This is the part where we give back to you, the lovely audience. Thank you so much for coming. It's an opportunity to win $25 free in the form of a gift card to Midtown Comics. Who would like $25 free? Simply raise your hand. Nice. Guy not wanting to come down? No? Do you really not want to do it?
Right. Extremely easy.
Sure?
Extremely easy.
All right. Come on down. Woo! What's your name?
Ryan.
Rudd?
Ryan.
Ryan. Ryan, audience Ryan.
His name was Rudd.
I didn't hear what he said.
I'm a villain.
Yeah. Exactly. All right, so this gift card might be yours. This is how it's going to work. I'm going to read you three questions, listen all three possible answers. Choose the correct one, go 3 for 3, gift card yours. Oh, boy. All right, so today's trivia is going to be on Cloak and Dagger.
Okay.
All right, here we go. Cloak and Dagger first appeared in which comic? Was it A, Amazing Spider-Man number 64, B, Peter Parker the Spectacular Spider-Man number 64, or 3, Gummy Bears Secret Origins number 64? So it's either A or 2.
A or 2.
Correct! All right. The last time we saw Cloak was A, in Civil War, B, in The Secret Invasion, or C, in Project Runway. I fucked it up. All right. It's either A, Civil War, or B, Secret Invasion. If you go time period-wise, you know the answer to this
one. Yeah, I'm
going to go Secret Invasion. Yes, correct! 2 for 2. Of Cloak and Dagger, which feels a constant hunger to feed? Is it A, Cloak, B, Dagger, or C, Lorenzo Lamas?
I'm going to go with Cloak.
Or you could go with Dagger.
Oh, okay, I'll go with Dagger.
Correct! 3 for 3! There you go. But... yeah, technically it can be either one. I mean, it was kind of a general thing. So yeah. Just
define hunger.
Yeah.
Define hunger.
Dagger has hunger 3 times a day.
Yeah.
I like to do really general, vague questions that I don't even know the answers to.
Big admission, Pete. Big admission.
Congratulations, Rudd. As we all know, tomorrow is New Comic Book Day. We recommend you go to Midtown Comics because they've been nice enough to...
Yes, even though with the holiday.
Even with holiday. Miracles do
happen. It's a President's Day miracle!
Woo! Woo! In the Constitution.
Yeah.
In the Constitution, they're like, we the people hold these truths to be self-evident that even after President's Day, you can buy comics on Wednesday.
And yeah, they were really forward-thinking.
Yeah. Anyway, we recommend you go to Midtown Comics. What are you guys looking forward to, Pete?
Four Eyes number 2.
Woo!
Yeah.
It's not about... Tell them what it's about.
It's about a touching story between a boy and his dragon.
Aww. There it is.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to Fire Breather number 4, which is also about a boy and his dragon. Interestingly enough.
I'm looking forward to A Boy and His Dragon number 5.
Which is actually about a relationship.
Young X-Men number 11, actually. This series has been getting better and better. Unfortunately, this is the second to last issue of it, which kind of sucks because it's finally been hitting its stride.
Yeah.
But I'm going to pick it up anyway.
Amazing Spider-Man. I pick it up every week except for the week that it doesn't come out.
wait, the fifth printing of the Obama variant? That's the one you want, right?
No, the other one.
Oh.
The new one.
And Valerie, plug some stuff that you got going on.
Well, I'm the president of Friends of Lulu, which is a national nonprofit organization for women in comics. And that's kind of ongoing. If anybody wants to drop by our website, it's www.friends-lulu.org. Cloak and Dagger should be out by the end of the year, so look for that. And I have a blog called Occasional Superheroine, www.occasionalsuperheroine.com.
That's great. Dave, what are you looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to both the next issue, Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, great.
Which is essentially D&D in space. Seriously, it's got a paladin, a troll-like guy. It practices. It's brilliant.
His name is Paladin.
Yeah, essentially. It's really cool. And I'm also looking forward to the last and final issue of Comic Foundry Magazine, which comes up tomorrow, with a Brian Lee O'Malley cover.
Ooh. And plug your stuff.
I'm working on High Moon, which is comes out every Monday on highmooncomic.com. You can also find it on pseudocomics.com. And then I'm working on some other stuff that I can't tell you about.
Come on, give us a little tease.
A little tease.
It is not for Zuda.
Ooh. When does the publish time?
Oh, the High Moon, the High Moon trade paperback comes out in October. And you should see more stuff from Steve Ellis and I starting in July that is non-High Moon related, but I can't say anything else. But it's awesome. He is probably the best collaborator in comics.
Right.
Nice. And unfortunately, he's yours.
And he is very good.
Cool. A couple of things before we go. Next week on the show, we are going to have C.B. Cebulski, who is the author of X Infernus, among other things.
Wasn't his birthday like yesterday?
And it was his birthday yesterday, so we'll be sure to talk about that. And we're also going to have Porter Mason on the show, who's a great comedian, and what's the name of his?
Bassist Wanted.
Yes.
A great collection of his strips about a successful band and a shitty band. That's good.
Yeah. Great. So definitely check that out. Also, you can check us out almost every day of the week at youtube.com/comicbookclub. A couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank Valerie for being on the show.
Yeah!
We most of all want to thank you guys. We're here every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Please tell your friends. Good night.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, yes.
Justin, thank you.
Hey, Alex, thank you.
Thank you.